welcome back. Sighting is the program. I'm Jeff Runson. My guest the second half of the program tonight is Joseph Gill, who is a scholar and truly an expert in the field of symbology and many other disciplines of ancient study and wisdom. We have callers waiting. You pointed out just before the break, Joseph, that all the major religions embellish themselves or adorn themselves at the highest levels with the colors, ancient colors as they were, correct?
Right, and they're nearly all the sun colors. The the lower levels are the gold, yellow, red, and orange, and the highest level is the white, like the Pope wears. And then there's also the black, which is a remnant of the worship of Saturn. But there's an old saying: "Oh, what a tangled web we weave, if not only to deceive." And basically, I'm at this point not selling a book, although I will offer my services to any of your listeners as far as finding good references. I have a list of them, and they're easily accessible. And if you're interested in finding out about what you might want to spend one day a week, one of the 2 days a week you get off, and you spend them off at the church, and then you give them 10% of your income. And I know, as a acolyte myself, as a choir boy actually, I was very nearly sexually assaulted by my priest, and it's not unusual, according to Mr. Malachi Martin, whom some of your listeners may know. It's not an unusual thing. In other words, basically, you're going to go to someone to ask how to run your family life, who generally doesn't have a balanced life of his
own. This is an historic criticism of the priesthood. It's nothing
and well-founded.
Well, historically speaking, you're quite right. As unpleasant as that may be, there is documentation going way back on that.
Well, right now they have literally several billion dollars worth of lawsuits pending just in the United States alone.
Billion with a B?
Billion. Yes. Now that is information
against
from
members
Mr.
Of the
Dr. Malachi Martin.
I understand. That's a shocker. Let's take a phone call now and welcome Bridget to the program. She is listening to us in Portland on KOTK. Hi, Bridget.
Hi.
That's my hometown, incidentally.
Oh, is it really?
J.K. Gills is my uncle.
I'm sorry. We've lived here for a very short time, and I'm not familiar with him. I'm sorry. But I was just listening to your discussion just a minute ago on the radio, and
sure.
I want to let you know that I sympathize with you. There are Catholics all over the world who have been sexually abused, and I'm glad that it's coming to light, and I hope that it continues to. But I'm afraid it isn't just limited to the Roman Catholic order. I understand
not
that,
by any means. Not by any means.
Yeah, quite a few of the organized religions just keep it well hidden.
It's a question of power over people.
Yes.
And abuse.
Well, do you know where the word father comes from and where the word Lord comes from? Now, I have no book to sell. I've got no axe to grind, and I'm not here to offend people. I'm only here to enlighten people with what I've learned over years of research. The word father comes from when people were married. The father slept with the bride the first night, and it was hoped that the eldest, the firstborn, would be a son, and that would be part of his family. And that father, also a derivation of that father, is the word Lord. And the word Lord means phallus.
And so, what language, Joseph?
Huh?
What
that
language?
Actually from Phoenician.
So we're going back to...
We're going
way
back.
Several thousand years.
But it's roots of what we've got right now.
That's what I'm saying.
The only thing that's changed is the actors. The play is the same.
Okay. All right. Bridget, go ahead.
Yes. There were several subjects that are coming to mind at the moment, but I know that in several instances in the King James Version of the Bible, the word, the actual name of the God of the Old Testament, Yahweh, was replaced with the words Lord and God, and you can note those wherever there are large and small capital letters replacing that name.
Well, it is fascinating. There's been over 600 translations of the Bible into the English language alone. And how much would you believe if any book that had been handed to you by your parents, a book that had gone through over 600 translations, with some 2,000 years, how much would you believe? Would you run your whole life around something like that without checking it out? I mean, just at least check it out.
Surely, or at least check several of the translations.
Sure. Yeah, that's the problem is, you know, we hardly believe what we read now, let alone what we read from long ago. I will tell you a short story if you're interested.
Surely.
And that is in the year 325 A.D., the Emperor Constantine decided that he wanted to start his own religion. And the Holy Roman Empire was falling apart. So he invited the 1,100 bishops to a small town on the Black Sea called Nicaea.
Mm-hmm.
And these were the worshippers of Hesos, which were originated as worshippers of Horus, Hesus and Horus. Okay, and they were from the west. From the east, there were the worshippers of Christos, which is the old Indian god from about 3000 B.C., and they were meeting and fighting and bickering in Rome, and he wanted to unify the religion. So what he did was he said, I've got a good idea. I'm going to unify these two. I'm going to unify the Hesus and the Christos, bring them together as one religion. Well, 800 of them decided that they didn't want anything to do with it, and they were properly executed by the Emperor of Rome, who was a god. Then he put together this religion. He became the first saint of the Catholic Church. He became the first pope of the Catholic Church. Then he started not burning the library, but collecting the best books, putting them in the bottom of the Vatican. There was a zodiacal worshiping cult that was about 2 miles away from the Vatican, and they hauled all the statues over to St. Peter's and put them out there as the apostles where they stand today.
The same?
And, yeah, the same ones. And if you study the history of architecture, you'll learn about that. Those are where they come from. And so anybody that objected to it, they got killed, and that's when he moved the capital to Constantinople. And there are many references to Hesos, which turns into Esos, which turns into Jesus. And there are many references to Christos or Christ before that period. But there are no references before 325 AD to the name Jesus Christ. Because it's a made up of... So basically, this is a religion that they just changed the name of the actors, but the play is the same. I have a book here, an incredibly great book. It's called The World's 16 Crucified Saviors. And it was written by Kersey Graves. And it goes through in detail stating that these saviors were all, you know, born with their mother was named Mary, which is the word for water or ocean. And when the sun is born out of the ocean, it seemingly lights up the whole room. There were three wise men that came from the east to celebrate his birth. It goes on and on.
What's the name of this
his
book?
His father, the father of Christos, was a carpenter, as Jesus' father was. I mean, they don't even bother changing anything.
What is the name of the book?
Well, it's called The World's 16 Crucified Saviors.
And who wrote it, and when was it published?
I have another book that I'd recommend even better than that for your listeners. The best book, I have over 300 books on the subject. And if you're a Christian and you just kind of like to check out your learning and what you're... This is a book called Bible Myths and Their Parallels in Other Religions. And it's by T.W. Dionne. And you can get that, order that through... And remember the author, because there's another book out there.
Spell Dionne for us.
D-O-A-N-E. And if you're on the web, you can go directly to www.kessingerpub, that's K-E-S-S-I-N-G-E-R-P-U-B.com, and you can see he's got many of these old and rare books in reprint. And they're in an acid-free paper, and they last forever.
Okay.
I'm not making a nickel on this. I'm only trying to get people to know that this isn't hidden knowledge. None of this is hidden knowledge. There's no hidden knowledge. Everything I talk about is written about in at least 25 or 35 or 40 books. It's there right now, available at your local bookstore. So it's, the only effort is to get out of the house, go down there and order it. And the one that I recommend above all others is Bible Myths and Their Parallels in Other Religions by T.W.Doane, which you can order either on the website or from any good bookstore.
All right. Bridget, if you'd like to hold on, we'll get another question from you. We have to take our break now. My guest is Joseph Gill, and a scholar who has spent decades studying this, as you've heard, if you've been with us for this second half of the program tonight. Your calls are welcome. He's saying some fairly controversial things, to put it mildly. 1-888 on radio is our phone number here, and we shall continue with more right after this. Welcome back, Sightings. I'm Jeff Rentz, six nights a week, 3 hours a night here, talking with Joseph Gill about ancient symbology and the roots of religion, and even before that. Bridget is on the phone from Portland, Oregon, listening on KOTK. Hello, Bridget.
Hi.
Your turn. One more question, please.
Yes. In the Old Testament, in several places, the name of Baal is worshipped. It's mentioned as well as in the book of Romans in the New Testament. Baal was the sun god of the Old Testament. Yet in the last chapter of Malachi, chapter 4, verse 2, we find the words, "The Son of Righteousness would arise with healing in his wings." And I think that that, in my opinion, that verse is there showing the opposition to Baal, the sun god, who was worshipped in the Old Testament and which was an abomination to Yahweh. The first chapter of the New Testament, Matthew, was actually first written in Hebrew, and the name that was given to Jesus was Yeshua. It was referred to derogatorily as Yeshua, as apart from Yahshua, which was the same name as Joshua, actually, in the Old Testament. That name in itself means Yahweh is salvation. And I think we need to do a little bit more research there. There's also a demon who goes by the name of Jesus. And I think we need to recognize that Jesus of Nazareth is set apart from the other the others who go by the name of Jesus, whether it's Jesus Rodriguez or whatever name there might be. I mean, it wasn't just the name of one person.
Uh-huh.
But I don't want to say that Jesus, who was Yahweh's, who was sent to earth by Yahweh, was, only a sun god.
Right, right. Well, I, incidentally, a few of your listeners may know that of a series of articles on symbolism that was put out in a newspaper called Veritas, which means truth.
That's Bill Cooper's paper, yeah.
Pardon me?
That's William Cooper's paper.
Right, and I was only in there insofar as to put my articles in on symbolism, and that was my only association with it, other than naming the paper.
Okay, all right.
But that is a thing of the past. To give you an idea, there was a Indian god called Krishna who lived about 3,000 years, about 2,500 years before Jesus. And yeah, this is all written about, okay? He lived about 2,500 years B.C., before Jesus. And a description of his life, both he and Jesus, both were called saviors and were foretold by prophets. Both of them came here to atone for the sins of the world. Both of them came here in the form of a man. Both of them came here of a virgin mother, one named Mary, another named Maia, both meaning water. both of them, and incidentally, Mar is the old name for ocean, which you'll see on old maps, and even in today on French maps, you'll see it as not the Pacific Ocean, but the Pacific Mer. Mar is Latin.
Mm-hmm.
Both Christos, Krishna rather, and Christ's fathers were carpenters. Both of them were of royal descent. Both of them were born in a cave on December 25th. Both of them.
Excuse me, Jesus wasn't born on December 25th.
That's one of the things that they say. But basically, what I'm giving you is an extremely abbreviated list of things that are in text, not once, but for over 16 different sun saviors before, that go through in detail. There are three wise men that came from the east. They died on a cross.
All 16?
I mean, it was like there's just nothing left out.
Joseph, did all 16 die on the cross?
Yes, they died on different kinds of crosses.
Okay.
They died on the Latin cross. They died on what's called the Ta, which
is there was a pre-Christian cross.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
right.
No, actually, that's not true. The Latin cross does predate Christianity. It was a common cross before the Christian cross.
Hmm.
Now, I explained about the construction of the cross being across the sun, visible for everybody any day of the week, that there aren't any clouds up there, and that there's humidity. It draws the bottom line down there. This isn't something that we have to guess about. You can go out there any time when it's a clear sky, and incidentally, you can look up in the blue, which is the color of many Indian gods. They're all blue. And when we talk about veritas, which is a Latin word for truth, it's represented by blue. And when you get something right out of the blue, it seems to be true. So, you know, and we look up into the sky for the truth.
Yeah, we often look up, don't we?
Oh, I was at the Orchid, a wonderful hotel over here in Hawaii, about a month ago, and it got time for the setting sun, and it was incredible. It was a sight to behold because there was about 400 people there, some of the richest people and some of the poorest people and some of the waiters and everybody else, and it's like everything stopped. They went to watch the sun set on the ocean. And when you see the sun setting over the ocean, envision this as you're looking at it. Just have your listeners envision this. When you see the sun coming over the ocean, what happens? There's a whole line of light that comes between your eye and the sun. You remember that?
Sure.
Jeff, it's like a reflection.
Oh, yeah.
There's this reflection of this light that comes across the water towards you. That's Jesus walking on the water.
All right, hold on right there, Joseph, and we're going to take a break, and we'll come back with more with Joseph Gill here in just a couple minutes. We have one line open, I believe, and 888 on radio is the number, and we'll be right back. Okay, we're back talking with Joseph Gill about things of long ago that are still here with us today. And let's go back to the phones now and say hello to Mark calling in from Philadelphia. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Hey, good evening.
Good.
Hey, I'm not sure we're going back quite far enough. I mean, I find this all interesting, but I wondered if your guest has gone into the symbology of the Sumerians and the Egyptians by way of the Anunnaki. Are you familiar with those subjects?
Yeah, in fact, I used to live a few blocks away from Zachariah Sitchin, and
okay.
I don't think that you'd get back too much further than the sun. And so basically what I'm saying is the origin of these are from the world around us.
Mm-hmm. Fact, well,
the roots of symbolism are really not in man or in the Anunnaki. The roots of symbolism are in nature, and they're in the world around us. And as I
well, that may be so, but it takes mankind and or Anunnaki to put symbology to them. In fact, when you were talking about the cross, I was surprised not to hear you talk about the Ankh from Egyptian, another pre-Egyptian, as in Sumerian, drawings and their symbology. The Ankh,
the Ankh is one of probably 400 different kinds of crosses that I have in my library, and I have a lot of respect for the Ankh. There are many different interpretations of the Ankh. And
well, I find it interesting that the word Ankh itself has a specific, apparently, etymology phonetically with the Anunnaki in terms of not only the consonants but the overall sound. And it's also interesting that the cross appears, at least in my interpretation, to represent the cross that was used to signify Nibiru, the planet of crossing, with the oval at the top clearly in an elliptical format, in my opinion, representing Nibiru's orbit. And in the
a lot of different ways, a lot of what you're saying has very interesting pre-Sumerian
origins.
Hold on right there. Go ahead, Joseph.
Yeah, there's all kinds of interpretations of it, and I honor your ability to be able to do what research you've done. For me, the Ankh is a ta, which is at the bottom, which is like a capital T. And on top of it is a circle. And
well, it's an oval, actually, throughout any of the authentic representations.
Pardon me?
It's always represented as an oval or an eyelet. And
the eyelet cross, which is used throughout Christendom. The oval is, to me, after my research, is the symbol of the female. It's the circle. It's the entrance of us all into life.
And in an interesting synchronicity with some other planet, Nibiru
is the male phallus. The T is the male phallus. So when you put the male phallus together with the female symbol, it's phallicism, and it represents union. It's very much like the triangle going up is flame, is fire.
And the Washington Monument with the oval office.
Hold on, Mark. Hold on.
And the triangle going down is water. So the union of water and fire is the union of the male and the female. And without phallicism or without sexuality, we wouldn't be able to multiply, and all of us would be not here. So
well, it was that knowledge that Enlil gave to the Adamu and his bride, apparently, in the Garden of Eden in the Sumerian creation tablets. So,
that's excellent, because that would only go to reinforce what I'm saying.
But I wouldn't contradict. I find your stuff interesting. I just think that when we look at the core symbology of our entire universe and the way that we look at it in terms of our 60 seconds and 60 minutes, that would seem rather arbitrary, if not for the combination creating the 3,600-year elliptical orbit.
You know, sometimes I understand what you say, and I know you're trying to tell me what you know, but I've been down that road, and I know Zachariah, and I've read all of his books carefully. I've read Velikovsky, and I've read hundreds and hundreds of other books, and what I see in it all is that, oh, what a tangled web we weave, if not only to deceive. Keep it dumb, keep it simple. The answers are those sweet, simple answers, and whether you're from outer space or here, you know, you need the sexual union to bring us close to God so we can propagate.
And well, absolutely, and the Anunnaki, I believe, actually taught and gave us all of Tantra and the various forms of studies as well.
Right.
Hold on, Mark. Let him respond.
Thank you very much.
That's a good point. Let him get in here and respond to that.
I don't mean to argue with you. I think a good discussion, we have to agree to argue.
Sure. it's interesting, though, because I look at, and I've studied a great deal of both the Eastern religions and the Middle Eastern area and the New World and so forth. It's interesting that you say you've studied Sitchin. Do you have any particular concerns that I might then look into so that I could further clarify my reading?
Well, let me make a suggestion to you, Mark. You and all the listeners out there who have serious questions and would like to find out about more references, I'm your man.
Your book list.
And you can write me an email at joGill@aloha.net.
AOLHA.net.
Or you can write me at Joseph Gill at SR, that's Star Route, or SR Box 7N, like Nancy, Captain Cook, spelled COOK, Hawaii, HI, 96704. And I'm not interested in getting into any battles, but if you are interested in finding out what I can share with you, I'd be very happy to do it, because I have no interest in making any money on this thing, and I have no agenda. I'm not a Freemason, nor am I a member of any church, but I am a free man, and it's really interesting. You've had David Icke on your show many times, and he's a friend of mine. I just talked to him yesterday for 2.5 hours, or the day before yesterday, in Florida. And he said to me, this is really interesting, he says, you know, I tell my people when I'm talking that the only way they'll really get free is when they give up all their belief systems and they really know the world for what it really is. And he says, very often I'm invited to give talks at Christian groups, that sort of thing, and I'm telling them about how they have to give up all their belief systems, and they're all cheering and laughing, and they think it's great because they think they're just talking about the Freemasons. Now, the Freemasons are very guilty, and so is everybody else who gets involved with any form of religion, dedicates their life and 10% of their income to something that they really don't and have not spent the time to investigate.
All right, we're coming up on a break now. Thanks, Mark, very much. Joseph,
look forward to hearing from you, Mark.
It's J.O. Gill, J-O-G-I-L-L, J.O. Gill, at aloha.net. Pretty simple. J.O. Gill at aloha.net. If you want to email Joseph, or if you want to write, Joseph Gill, S period R period box 7N, Captain
Correct.
Cook, Captain Cook, Hawaii, that's H-I, 96704. It's all really simple, isn't it, Joseph? Once we give up belief system, we're really not giving up any. We are escaping to reality, and it's all right there. It's right there. Be right back with much more. Your call's more than welcome tonight, 1-888 on radio, as we continue with Joseph Gill. All right, welcome back, and let's take another phone call and go down to Santa Barbara. Listening on KQSB 990 is Zola. Hello, Zola. Welcome back to the program.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi there.
I just wanted to say to Mr. Gill, the remark he made about the sun on the water was a beautiful thing. It sure makes you think about things, doesn't it? But also, you mentioned a little bit earlier William Cooper.
Yes.
Do you know whether he's still active in the business or not?
Yeah, I understand he is sporadically publishing his Veritas, but I haven't seen it. I just did pick this up secondhand. Joe, any knowledge of Cooper's doings?
Well, I'm not affiliated with him anymore of mutual intent.
I understand.
But, he's a very knowledgeable guy, and I think perhaps he's a messenger that has become the message. And that's unfortunate. But I wanted to say that you know about Carl Gustav Jung.
Who?
You're talking
Carl Gustav
to
Jung.
Jung. J-U-N-G, Zola?
Yeah, Jung. Jung. He
Jung,
wrote about 40-50 books on psychology and alchemy, and he was very, very famous. Next to Freud, you know.
Mm.
He was asked one time whether he believed in God or not. And he laughed and said, I don't believe in God. He said, I know God. And I know God, too. Mm-hmm. I see that light going across the water. I was a scientist. I've looked through a microscope for hundreds and hundreds of hours, and I've seen God in my microscope, and I've spent many hours with a telescope, and I've seen God in my telescope, and I've seen God in my whole world.
How can you miss?
I don't need a priest to make me commune with God. I do it on a daily basis, many times a day.
That's
I'm a very, very God-aware person.
Mm-hmm.
And it has nothing to do with man-made monopolistic religions of any kind.
Right. Well,
I appreciate that comment about the sun across the water.
Well,
because it is
of,
a beautiful sight.
It's absolutely
and the sun should be honored. It's without it, we would all perish.
Isn't
shortly.
That the truth?
You know, taking that one step further, the safe transmission of bodily fluids from human to human, i.e. uninfected, as in HIV,
mm-hmm.
Is essential for the survival of our species. So to honor that and respect it is very much in keeping with
Well, you know, it's fantastic that you just said that, because one of the greatest old sayings in all of history is true without falsehood, certain and most true, that which is above is that which is below, and that which is below is that which is above. For the performance of the miracles of the one thing, and that is by Hermes Trismegistus, which according to Herodotus, who lived 500 B.C., he was called the father of history. He said of Tho, that Tho Hermes came to Earth from the stars in 17,570 B.C., a staggering remote date about which the Greek historian was quite certain. So that's interesting.
Right.
So, yeah, you're right. It is as above, so below. And above I see the sun, and below I see the phallus.
Mm-hmm.
Because our real connection with God is our ability to propagate ourselves. And what more do we honor than our children?
That's right.
Unless you want to get controversial and say, who do we send to war?
Mm-hmm.
We send our children, and we make sure to get them when they're young enough so that
they
aren't smart
better.
Enough.
That's
you know,
right.
Nobody in the right mind at 40 would go to war, so
that's
they have
right.
to pick the dumb ones.
No, it's
well, not the dumb ones, but the, you know, the naive ones.
Yeah.
We send our children to war. It's sick.
Well, we slaughter them. All right, Zola, thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Zola.
Bye-bye.
Let's welcome now, and I don't have the location, I'm sorry, but Connie is next on the line. Where are you calling from, Connie?
Hot Springs.
Hot Springs, Arkansas, listening on the Signal
right.
KSYG.
It's like a hot place to live.
Well, it is right now.
It is hot down there, I understand
yeah.
so.
I was
Have
wondering...
Have you gotten any of that fog from Mexico?
Pardon me?
Any fog from... Any of that... The
smoke.
Smog
yeah.
from Mexico.
There sure has been. It's cleared
I'm
up
sorry
now,
for you.
But it was pretty hard to breathe there for a while.
Okay, Connie,
right
your question for
too,
Joseph.
We,
go ahead.
We sit in the middle of a crater, a volcano crater, so that makes it a little bit worse, you know.
Yeah.
It just hangs
yeah.
in there. But
are you near Murfreesboro?
Not too close to Murfreesboro, no, I don't.
You know, that used to be a diamond mine. That was the only diamond mine in America.
Yes, uh-huh. I am familiar with that. Oh, there's many things here in Arkansas that...
Other than Clinton...
Pardon me?
Oh. Other than Clinton.
We have, Joseph, we have some of our greatest listeners in the wonderful state of Arkansas. Believe
me,
they are
I love
sharp
Arkansas.
People. And go ahead with your question, Connie.
Okay. I was wondering if you had taken into consideration the fact that, like, history repeats itself and with many coincidences, such as in, like, the Kennedy and Lincoln and... what do you think about that, if it is possible that...
Well, if you don't learn from history, you're doomed to repeat it. And as I've said here, I can very easily list at least 16 saviors that came to save us all. And are we going to do it again, or are we going to look up the sun and honor it for what it is and its beauty, and without it we all die and our crops die, or are we going to make some other personification of it? You know, we've got India and Pakistan fighting. I've been through both those countries, and I tell you this, I've spent a lot of time in both those countries, and I can't tell a Pakistani from an Indian. They look the same. They talk the same. They act the same. And quite frankly, they're all wonderful people. It's just the governments at the top that want to expand and show off, and their nationalism,
And by the way, in Pakistan, all civil rights have been suspended as of a day ago because of the crisis with India and nuclear weapons. So all civil rights in Pakistan suspended by the government. Now, that's the kind of footing they're on over there.
You know, they're all fighting over Kashmir, where I have traveled extensively. And I tell you, the Kashmiris don't want either the Indians or the Pakistanis in their country.
Nothing new there. All right, let's get a question from Connie and get it answered here.
Well, I was just wondering if, of course, I didn't know that, I was thinking this is possible that these individuals could all have existed, even though they had those same coincidences. And as an example, I had put forth Abraham Lincoln and John Kennedy, because there's a whole line of coincidences between them. And these things can happen.
All right, there's a long cycle.
I got to tell you, there's a wonderful movie that's out that will give you a perfect answer for what you're talking about. And it's called They Live. They Live.
It's not out currently. It's out, though.
It's out. You can get it at any Blockbuster video. You order it. It's from the 80s, and it was with John Carpenter. It's a very low-rate, cheap movie. The first time you'll say, what's he fussing about? I watched that movie 10 or 12 times, and each time I learn more and more. Because, you know, I'm lucky if I find 5% of truth in my books. There's 80% of the truth in this movie.
It's called
There's
they
more truth
live.
In this movie than any place else I've seen.
Was that...
It's called
perhaps,
They Live.
Was it perhaps the one about with the glasses? They all put the glasses
right.
on? Yes,
right.
I think that's a great movie.
Watch that. Don't watch it once or twice. Watch it three or four or five times. And each time you'll see the great effort has to be made to see the world the way it is.
Uh-huh.
And it isn't just for aliens. It's for Christians or for Freemasons or for anybody that's caught up in any dogma system. We have to, you know, we create our own limitations and we fight like hell to keep them.
Right.
Yeah, we'll kill to keep them, won't we?
Yeah, and we wait for the government to take care of us, and as Jeff just said, the government's going to take care of the Pakistanis really well by taking away all their civil rights. And, you know, the truth is that one man in 10,000 knoweth his own religion, whatever religion that is. All the rest of them are running around thinking that they've got the secret.
Yeah.
And the truth is that the one man in 10,000 is standing up there telling each of us that they're going to control our lives. And all it takes is for 5 or 6% of the people to stand up and say, this is enough to that one man in 10,000, and tell him to get lost, and we'll get our freedoms back, whatever way we want to live.
All right. Connie, we've got to wrap it up. Thanks very much for calling in and participating. We appreciate that.
Well, thank you.
You bet. And
thank you, Connie.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Joseph, good night, Connie. Joseph, kind of about a one-minute wrap-up here, if you want, on this this visit tonight.
Well, I certainly look forward to that 3 hours that you promised me in the next couple weeks.
See? Man
but,
never forgets. It's
a real honor to be on your show.
Thank you.
And basically, symbolism is something we're not taught as children, but it is an integral and a very important part of our life. As a matter of fact, symbolism is the language before the, quote, Tower of Babel. It is a language that all of us spoke around the world similarly because we were all observers of nature and we all had a direct relationship with God and his garden. And in that garden, we see the nature. And out of the garden came the serpent, right? So the serpent is the origin of all religions, and it's not bad or good. It's just our own choice to give up our freedom.
All right. Again, the email address for Joseph Gill is J-O-G-I-L-L, J-O-Gill, at AlohaNet. Thank you, Joseph. Very interesting
indeed.
Thank
you very much, Jeff.
Okay, good night.
I look forward to being back.
Thank you. That's our program tonight. Pretty interesting way to start the Monday off. Remarkable. Linda Moulton Howe. We'll be here tomorrow night, a rare visit with Linda. Her new book, Glimpses of Other Realities 2, is a huge effort to assay the current state of the UFO, ET, paranormal issues, and she has done a magnificent job. We will talk with Linda Howe for 3 hours tomorrow evening, and many of you familiar with Linda's prowess, her knowledge, her scholarship in the field. She's quite a lady, and she'll be here tomorrow night. Many great shows this week on tap for you, including Thursday night with Jim Keith, Black Helicopters 2, Dr. Russell Blaylock Friday about what we're eating that really takes charge of us. Where do you hear about that? Many things to come your way. Until next time, thanks very much for choosing to spend your time this evening with me and my guests, and I'll see you tomorrow night. Until then, good night and good luck.